We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
There's a high fly ball
from KMOX Sports.
That's hit deep to left field, and it's a gutter.
Big fly, Nolan Arenado, there's a moment for you.
Welcome to the Meyer Jensen Sports Open Line.
Ooh. And the driving jam time.
And the Billikens win this one.
Meyer Jensen, a personal injury law firm, because sometimes the gloves have to come off. MeyerJensen.com.
Comeback pattern caught. Touchdown, Kansas City!
Now, Sports Open Line on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Great to be with you on Friday night here on KMOX. We're going to be all over the place tonight. This is going to be the first time in a while we're talking about things other than baseball, which is odd, but fun. Because, I mean, I like other things. I like baseball a lot, but, you know, I also like hockey, and I also like college football, and I also like the NFL. So we're going to mix in a little bit of everything here on the show tonight. I have Ryan Fagan of the Sporting News jump in at 7:15 for a little bit. Cardinals conversation, probably a little playoff baseball conversation as well. Going to hear a little bit from Craig Berube in about 20 minutes. He had some comments today in advance of the Blues' final preseason game. I guess in the sense, you know, baseball transitioning out right as we're getting to the start of the regular season for the Blues is kind of fun as far as our conversations go locally. We don't really have downtime, if you will. I mean, we do have a week between tonight and the opener. But still, I think plenty of, like, really good angles to look at. I kind of like the team this year. I'm going to talk more about them later on this hour. I like the team. And I do think it's going to be a better team than it was last year. I don't know yet about the playoffs. I think the regular season is going to tell us about that because there are some questions. But we're going to do some Blues a little bit later on. I got some football later in the show as well. I do want to start with some baseball. I know, you know, we talked a lot about the Cardinals and what we learned from 2021 and what it all tells us. And I think we can still, like all of us that are baseball observers, still maybe get some ideas about things you can do from watching some of the playoff teams, too, in looking at how differently these teams are all put together. I mean, the Braves and the Brewers are playing right now in Milwaukee, and the Brewers are up 2-0 on a home run by Rowdy Tellez. I got the pronunciation wrong there. But Rowdy Tellez hit a two-run homer to put him up 2-0, and it appears that, let's see, who was that? Jock Peterson just hit a home run for the Braves. And again, think about the guys that are coming up big in this game. Jock Peterson, relatively kind of late addition, relatively minor addition, I would think, for the Braves. They didn't give up much to get him because the Cubs were going fire sale, and the Braves had a bunch of outfielders that got hurt. Ronald Acuna got hurt. They had all kinds. So what they did is they went out and got a bunch of them. They went out and got Adam Duvall. They went out and got Jock Peterson. You look at Milwaukee. They didn't. You know, when you look at their moves around the deadline, where are the blockbusters? I mean, the one they made that was the big one was getting Willy Adames really early in the year. But all of the other adjustments that they made to the roster were relatively minor and relatively late. So what the lesson is, to me anyway, is that you don't have to make every move a big move. I know it's so much fun, and I want one of the big shortstops too. I really do. Like, yes, I would love to see. Corey Seager is like the dream list for me. He's really the perfect player for what the Cardinals need. A left-handed bat. He doesn't strike out a lot. You know, does almost everything well. He's not an elite defender, but he's a good defender. He's solid. And down the road, if he becomes less solid, you can move him off of shortstop, and you could move him to DH, or you can move him to first or third eventually, although I don't see third an option anytime with Arenado on the long-term deal. And I know Goldie is around for a number of years, but, you know, that would be around the time frame you'd be saying maybe Seager needs to move off a shortstop. So I'm not worried about any of that. But I just I don't think that maybe it'll be different this year, but that's not how the Cardinals have operated for them. I mean, like, they've gotten into free agency and spent some money, but it's never been that money. like the big money, right? Like the stuff that you're paying Goldie. They did that after acquiring him via trade. They did the same, you know, acquiring Arenado via trade in a deal that's already locked in is different. They haven't really won the or gone into the really deep end of the pool in free agency. You know, and like who's the last, what's the last time they went into free agency and got in on one of those mega deals? I mean, like, you know, they went out and got Dexter Fowler. Fowler was the best available outfielder that year. So they won the bidding on the best available outfielder, but he was not an A-level player. This wasn't Seager or Story or Baez or anybody like that. So, I mean, I'm not saying they shouldn't do it. I'm not saying it wouldn't make some sense. But I will say, you know, looking at next year, even with the payroll that's coming off the books, and you've got a lot of money coming off the books, you also have raises that are starting up. You know, I think that's another important thing to keep in mind, that Flaherty's going to get a raise. Hudson's going to get a raise, although it probably won't be very big because he was hurt all year. You know, Adam Wainwright pretty much doubled his salary for next year. I mean, Waino made $8 million this year, actually more than doubled it. He made $8 million this year. It's $17.5 million for next year. So while there is money free, I'm not sure they're going to want to go long term with, you know, Goldie now having he has 3 more years left, and obviously Arenado goes well beyond that. And you have to consider, you know, what's the plan with Flaherty? How much is Tyler O'Neill going to make down the road? I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying it's not absolutely necessary, because I'm looking at teams in the playoffs right now, teams that won their divisions. And by the way, you know, look, the Cardinals down the stretch were every bit as good as Milwaukee. They weren't for the first few months of the year, but they were at the end of the year, they were clearly as good as Milwaukee. And they had a better record than the Braves. The Braves won their division, but they only had 88 wins. But you look at how these teams, what additions they made, where's the blockbuster trade? There wasn't one. It was, let's go get the pieces that fit. You know, at Tampa Bay, where Tampa Bay doesn't go out and make the blockbuster move. They go out and find pieces that are going to fit. Something, you know, there's something about the player that they like, and they will find a way to use that thing in competitive environments. So, I mean, to be clear, I am the fan. I mean, I want Corey Seager. You know, I would love to see Trevor Story. It would be a cool thing if Trevor Story wanted to play with Nolan Arenado because they were buddies. And, like, don't get me wrong, I'm okay with that. But I'd also be okay with the idea of thinking about the, like, what Will Leach brought up yesterday, the Carlos Beltran kind of deal, the Lance Berkman kind of deal. You know, an experienced guy that's not looking at 7 or 8 or 9 years, but the guy that may be looking at a year with an option or 2 years where they can come in. Because you guys, they have the core of the lineup. You have 330 home run hitters returning to this team next year. So we're not in the same position. This team is not in the same position that they were in 2 years ago or 3 years ago when you're going into the off seasons, right? They've gotten those guys now. They have the donkeys. You've got Goldschmidt and Arenado in the middle of your order. And now Tyler O'Neill has joined them as a 30-homer guy. You need an upgrade. You need more offensive production. But there are a lot of ways to go about that. And I mean, also while also allowing for the natural development process of some of your best young players. Do you want to go make a bunch of deals that block you from getting Nolan Gorman into the lineup when he's ready? I mean, I doubt it. But there's always a way when you have versatile pieces. And that's one of the things. You look at Tampa Bay. Versatility is one of their great strengths. And be honest. Look, the Dodgers have the crazy payroll, right? They've got the ability to lose Trevor Bauer and respond to that by going out and getting Max Scherzer and Trey Turner. Like, they can afford it. They can afford to pay off on the prospects, because if they ever come into a year where they don't have prospects, they just go buy another player. They have unlimited resources in that regard. But then look how they play, though. They still have matchups everywhere. You still got, you know, Chris Taylor's a matchup guy, and, you know, I mean, like, they still play it that way all across the board. They've been doing that for years. And I think it's going to be interesting to see, like, what the chosen path is for that, for the Cardinals. Because I think when you look at these playoffs, and by the way, I didn't even mention the Giants. I just described the Giants. What blockbuster moves did the San Francisco Giants make? Where did they go and spend $300 million to improve their roster? You know, the team that did all that was San Diego. How'd that work out? And don't get me wrong, I still think San Diego's one of the better teams going into next year, and their biggest problem this year was injuries on the pitching side. You know, too many of their pitchers got hurt. But again, look at what San Francisco did to go from where they were last year to 107 wins this year. You know, they got 18 home runs out of Wilmer Flores, who's a role player. They got 18 home runs out of Lamont Wade Jr., who's a role player. You got 13 home runs out of Alex Dickerson, role player. 12 home runs out of Austin Slater, role player. Darren Ruff, 16 home runs, role player. And then, of course, their old guys, Crawford and Posey and Belt, well, they all found the fountain of youth. They turned into the guys that they were like 5 years ago. And not on the pitching side. What are the big moves that they made? I mean, they offered Kevin Gausman They extended him the qualifying offer, and he took it. They went out and got Anthony DeSclafani. Is that a blockbuster move? Signed Alex Wood. Blockbuster move? No. So, I don't know that the blockbuster is necessary, and as we've learned from some teams, when you load up too front heavy, so let's say the Cardinals do go get Story or Seager, are you a little too top heavy salary-wise? Because then between that, let's say that person's a $25 million a year, which is low. It's probably going to be 30. Let's just say 25. Well, now you're committed to what? $80 million with your top three players? Not counting Wainwright, not counting, obviously, Yachty. But just Goldschmidt, Arenado, and then that new player, you're looking at being in the 80, $85 million range. That's half your payroll. Maybe what we're learning from good, smart baseball teams, and the Cardinals are a very smart baseball team, and they've obviously been good for a very long time. But what I'm looking at in the playoffs right now are teams like Milwaukee and teams like the Giants and the Dodgers and the Rays that have made a lot of big improvements without throwing around that big contract. Just something to think about. But, you know, again, if you're going to bring in Corey Seager, I'm not going to complain. I'm all good. You don't have to sell me on it. But, you're also going to have, 12 other teams bidding on all those guys, 15 other teams bidding on a lot of those guys. So, it's not as simple as just go get them. Anyway, we'll talk more about that as we go. That was something that stood out to me from paying attention to what's going on in the playoffs right now. I mean, the Yankees are not built that way, right? The Yankees are all about the big dogs and the big salaries and all that. How'd it work out for them? They went home just like you did. Even though they've got $200 million payroll and they got the big dudes everywhere. It's not necessarily about that. It's about finding complementary pieces and depth. And the Giants' depth was huge. And their versatility, their ability to play matchups was huge. Tampa's been doing it for years. So, I think that's definitely something to consider as we talk about the offseason. All right, coming up next, more playoff baseball. You remember that guy that stole all the headlines last October? He kind of did it again last night. But I'm going to say this. It feels a lot better to watch this time around with Randy Arozarena doing it again for the Rays last night. I'll explain what I mean coming up next on KMOX.
There's a high fly ball.
Welcome back to the Meyer Jensen Sports Open Line.
And it's a gunner.
Big fly, Nolan Arenado.
Meyer Jensen, a personal injury law firm, because sometimes the gloves have to come off. MeyerJensen.com.
And the Billikens win this one.
Touchdown, Kansas City.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, a little more baseball here, and we're going to hear from Craig Berube coming up in a few minutes. Going to shift over to a little Blues in advance of their final preseason game tonight. It's an interesting structure, right? You get out of the gates, right? You're like third day in camp, you're playing preseason games, exhibition games, and then from your last preseason game, you're basically off for a week until you open up the season. It's a very odd thing, but they have a team trip plan. I don't know if you guys paid attention. Like, apparently early next week, they're going to Vail, Colorado for like a group hangout, like the whole guys, just like a guys bonding trip in advance of the season. So yeah, that's cool. And we're going to be talking about the Blues and some things. You know, I think it's important not to get overly excited about what you're seeing in the preseason in any sport, right? I mean, you're not playing with your normal lineup every day. You got guys in and out and all that. But we're getting to that point now where I think we've learned some things. And how about James Neal getting a little love? He's playing up tonight. He's playing with Thomas and Tarasenko tonight. So that's pretty interesting. We'll do some more Blues coming up in a few minutes. I'm bringing this up today because this is a less painful conversation today than it would have been a year ago. When Randy Arozarena was tearing up the 2020 postseason for the Rays and doing Babe Ruth things. I mean, look, we all know, and I'm sure it was tough for people in the front office with the Cardinals, too. I'm sure they were like, every time, just like, ugh. Because at the time, coming out of 2020, Tyler O'Neill hadn't had the chance to establish himself. He had some injuries. He struggled last year. I mean, keep in mind, Tyler O'Neill was on the wild card roster last year for that three-game series. He never got an at-bat in that series. In three games, he didn't get an at-bat. That's where he was at this time a year ago. Now, obviously, this year he's broken out, and that's why the Arozarena stuff doesn't feel as bad. Because, look, Carlson was always a higher-rated prospect by everybody than Randy Arozarena was. And not to mention the fact, I mean, he's four full years younger than Arozarena, too. Carlson was always in your plans. The questions were always about Bader and O'Neill and whether or not you should have kept Arozarena over one of them or whatever. And look, with their philosophy of putting defense at the top of the priorities list, none of these three players, O'Neill, Carlson, or Arozarena, none of them were going to play center field. Bader's defense is the calling card. And his offense this year was good enough to say that guy's an everyday player. I mean, when you're 16% above league average offensively, you're an everyday player. You won't find many guys that are that good offensively that aren't regular players. And, obviously his defense is great. The breakout for Tyler O'Neill, though, is what I think makes the sting of watching Arozarena play well. Just not even, not really, I shouldn't say it. Like what made the sting of last year not sting so much right now. Plus, you saw a 21-year-old Matthew Liberatore have some success at AAA, and you're like, okay. So if you got, let's just say you got a mid-rotation starter out of Liberatore for the long term. All right, that's valuable, man. I don't know what he's going to be. He could be a number one. He could be a number four. I don't know. But let's just say he's a number three. That's valuable, man. That's a big deal. And to have a number three starter that makes the minimum for a number of years is a really big deal. So seeing Tyler O'Neill go off and have there's nothing fluky about Tyler O'Neill's season either, right? I mean, the real numbers are pretty amazing, right? 286, 34 bombs, 80 ribbies, 26 doubles, all of that despite missing 20 games on the injured list. 912 OPS, 50% above league average in terms of offensive production. That's a big deal, guys. 50% is legit. I'm not even sure Bryce Harper is 50% above league average this year. I'm going to look right now because I'm not sure. And Harper had a good year. This wasn't like a down, quiet year for Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper this year was, he was better than that. He was like 75% better than league average. But the point is, like 50% average, that's an all-star. Like, that's all-star production if you're 50% above league average. And there's nothing fluky about it when you look at what the batted ball data tells you. He's in the top 4-5%. In all the things that would matter for a hitter. Average exit velocity, max exit velocity, hard hit rate. So, that barrel percentage. I mean, like, those things really matter. And, yep, he strikes out a lot. But when he hits it hard. And that's kind of thing. So it's either a strikeout or it's hit hard. But it's not all home runs. I mean, he hit 286. Hit a bunch of doubles. And one thing that really improved for him, and it's the real key to his success moving forward too, is that he has improved his chase rate. And he started to improve the chase rate last year, but it didn't really pay big dividends. He wasn't barreling the ball up the way that he is now. And now you're looking at him and you see, all right, when he swings the bat, he's providing hard contact. and you look at all those home runs, I think like 25% of those home runs were hit opposite field. From center field to the right field foul pole. Yeah, obviously the most of them are pulled. That's true for almost every hitter. You're mostly going to pull your home runs. But if you look dead center to the right field line, I think he had 9 home runs from dead center to the right field line, and then the rest of them from dead center to the left field line. But you started to see the ball hit for power, and we saw that in the spring too, by the way. Mike Claiborne and I talked about it throughout the course of the spring when we were doing the countdown to opening day shows, that it was one of the most encouraging signs in spring training was that Tyler O'Neill was hitting for power to the opposite field with regularity. And we saw it again in the regular season. So I don't know about you guys, but I'm actually kind of enjoying watching Rosarena play more. There's a lot less regret attached to it, right? I'm watching, like last night, he hits a bomb. He steals home. He's the first player in baseball history to steal home and hit a home run in a playoff game. And I love the steal a home, not because it's Randy A, but because I just don't think teams take advantage of the shift enough when it comes to base running. If teams want to go through dramatic shifts, you need to make them pay for it on the bases some way, shape, or form. Now, not everybody has the instinct or the speed to steal home in that scenario, but it was perfect. You had a third baseman that was nowhere near the base. So Rosarena was basically halfway down the line before he ever started running. His lead was halfway down the line because the third baseman's nowhere close. You got a left-handed pitcher, so he's not looking at you. So you get halfway down the line and you get any kind of a jump at all. I mean, he stole that thing easy. And I'm not saying everybody can steal home plate all the time, but I am saying that if teams were more aggressive with their base stealing, you could probably force the shifts to be a little less aggressive in their right. So, yeah, you know, a year ago it was that, you know, when you mentioned Randy Rosarena's name, you almost had to do it like Lord Voldemort, like he who shall not be named. It was like full of regret, like, oh, no, we need offense, and he's doing that. But now it's, I think, anyway, a little more fun again because you're like, all right, he's really fun and he's really good.
And he's on my fantasy team, so I like that.
And but you know, when you're watching what the Cardinals got out of the outfield this year and you see Tyler O'Neill emerging as a legitimate middle-of-the-order hitter and he has the numbers behind it to back it up. You know, like I mentioned, he's got these great numbers, right? He slugged .560, which is crazy. You know, his expected slugging was actually higher. His expected numbers are actually better than his real ones, which means he was unlucky. He had that kind of year, and he had some bad luck to go with it. Not a lot. It was only a little bit of bad luck, but still. All right, let's change gears. We're going to get back to baseball next hour. Ryan Fagan of the Sporting News will join me at 7:15. We'll talk more about the Cardinals, what we saw with the wild card game, and what we learned from that moving into next year, plus a little bit more on some of these other playoff series. And, of course, we'll talk about a little football in the next hour as well. First time in a long time we've been able to mix a little football in. Next up, though, focus on the Blues. We're going to hear a little bit from Craig Berube on some of the hot topics of the day as the Blues get ready to play their final preseason game tonight. We'll get some hockey next up here on KMOX.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Get ready for Sunday Night Football as the Chiefs take on the Bills.
Touchdown, Kansas City!
Hear the game here, pregame at 6, kickoff 7:20, on your voice of the Chiefs, KMOX.
All right, back in on KMOX. First time in a long time, we've got more time for things outside of baseball. I mean, obviously in baseball season, yeah, you know, it's baseball. I mean, it's every day. And, you know, even when we have a day off from games here and there, I mean, baseball's at the front of mind. Well, we got time now for a little NFL, which we'll get to next hour. We got a little time, more time. We're going to talk some more Mizzou Well, maybe not. They have to play a little better. We'll talk more about them in Illinois, but I'd like to get a little bit more production. I was a little disappointed, not a little, extremely disappointed with how it went in the Tennessee game for the Missouri Tigers. But we will talk about them and college football big picture as we move forward. But also, we're going to spend a lot more time on the Blues, who open the season next week. And actually, I think it's a week from tomorrow night. So after tonight's preseason finale, that's pretty much it for a week. So they're going to have a break. They're going to take a trip, the team trip to Vail, kind of a bonding thing. And these the Blues have done that. I'm sure a lot of other hockey teams do too, but they've done that a number of times in recent years where early in the season, it may not always be before, but early in the season, when they're on a road trip, they'll find a couple of days for the guys to get together and, you know, the guy, new guys to get to know each other and the guys that have been around just to kind of, you know, reform all those bonds and everything else. Well, aside from all of that, you got a team that's shaping up for the regular season. That's, to me, is pretty interesting. And you can look at that for tonight's projected lineup. You've got, of course, Ryan O'Reilly and David Perron. They're not going to split those two guys up. Those guys have been so good together. You got Brandon Saad playing with them tonight, which is fun. On the second line, you've got Shen, Kyrou, and Buchnevich, which is also very fun. Third line tonight is Thomas Tarasenko and James Neal, which is really interesting. You know, they let Michael Frolik go. He was in on one of the PTO, and now they still have Neal around, and be interesting to see how they do it. And by the way, we haven't had a chance to talk about it, so I'm not acting like any of these things are new. I just haven't had a chance to say these things on the radio. But been a pretty impressive camp for the rookie Jake Neighbors too. And tonight he's playing on the fourth line. And I want to, you'll hear from Craig Berube here. I want to play a little bit of what he said today in advance of tonight's game coming out of practice. He talked a bit about, you know, why Neighbors is getting a look on the fourth line with Bozak and Barbashev, why Neal is getting a look with Thomas and Tarasenko. And also, again, here talking a bit about big picture, the roster coming together and looking like a pretty nice group coming into tonight.
You know, we have other guys that aren't in the lineup tonight too, but we wanted to take a look at a couple different combinations and stuff. So, but it's, you know, I think we got a deep group of guys. We've been happy with camp. You know, the way it's gone, I think a lot of guys have shown a lot of good stuff, and we got one more game to take a look at a few things, but overall we're pretty pleased.
Is this a big night for Neal and Neighbors?
I think it's, well, it is, I guess. That's a good way to put it. But, you know, I think, you know, it's not just those guys. We want to take a look at some other things that we have going tonight, too. So, you know, we want to go out there and we want to play a good, solid hockey game. That's basically what we want to do tonight.
Craig, we've asked you a lot about Perunovic and Mikola and guys like that on that back end of the deep throughout camp, but what have you felt about Jake Walman's game so far in camp and even a guy like Bortuzzo that's on that back end?
Jake Walman has played better and better as it's gone along. His best game was his last game. I think his practice has picked up too, in my opinion. He seemed a little off early on in camp, and I'm not sure exactly why, but I feel that he's got over that, and I thought that he had a really good game in Minnesota, so I was very good, pleased to see that. And Robert Bortuzzo, same thing. I thought Bortz had a solid game, and Minny did his job. You know, he looks good to me, like normal Bortz, so it's good to see.
Craig, what are you looking for now? It'll be their second year kind of basically together of Krug and Falk as a pair.
Just to kind of, you know, I think that how they performed last year, especially the second half of the season, you know, a lot of the same. I think that they feed off each other really well. I think they use each other, moving the puck really well. They both can move the puck and get up the ice. You know, I thought their defending was solid last year. They were plus players. They both, Krug, you know, it took a bit early on with, you know, everything with the power play and all that, but he finished strong. And I know he didn't score a lot of goals, but he had a lot of opportunities. He just didn't put them in the net. But, you know, we're looking for 200 foot of hockey with both guys, offensively and defensively.
Can you
one last tune up for your power play tonight. How do you think they've done this preseason, and are there still things you're looking to tune up?
Yeah, I don't think they've had a lot of time together, first of all, in games. It's difficult in the preseason to get all your power play unit guys together. So, but in practice yesterday, I was pretty pleased with what I saw, the way they moved the puck around. You know, and just a lot of the same. We need that quick puck movement. You can't be dusting it off. They got to move it quick and then attack. And you know, attack with the purpose and get pucks in the paint and into the net. Be good around the net with numbers for rebounds and things like that. So, you know, that quick puck movement and not dusting it off and having the attack mentality is what we're looking for.
Greg, how much of the fact that, too, you're playing a lot of your top-heavy guys, too, is because you don't play for another 8 days after tonight?
Yeah, no, we wanted to have a lot of our guys in the lineup tonight, which we do have. And, you know, we don't play for a while, so we're going to get more practice time in, which isn't a bad thing. I think it's a good thing to keep working on things. We keep trying to improve and keep trying to get better. That's the goal.
Greg, with Neil, I mean, he's played at a bunch of different lines so far. Are you just trying to get a good feel for where he fits in best?
A little bit of that, and just trying to see him in different roles, you know, if that makes sense. Not roles so much, but different line combinations, just to see what we're, you know, we might see something different with somebody else. So tonight I got him with Thomas and Tarasenko to see what he looks like there.
Is this also a different role for Neighbors tonight, being on more of a...
Yes, it is, and it goes along with the Neil thing. I want to see Jake Neighbors playing in a different role and different line combinations.
A little bit of Craig Berube from earlier today, and some really fascinating stuff there. You know, Neighbors has been, I don't know, it's probably a bit much to say revelation, but he's been really impressive. And... You know, you'd think normally you get a top-end prospect with some offensive ability. He's also known for his physicality and his grind and all of that. But, you know, normally when you have a young player that's talented like that, if you're going to keep them, normally you play them in the top nine. And that's probably the plan, right? He's been playing up the lineup. In fact, I saw JR write about it on The Athletic the other day that, I mean, depending on how things are structured going in, he could end up playing some time on the top line. Just as because he complements the skills of the other guys well, and because he's played well. But, you know, as you heard Craig Berube talk about there, you want to see guys in different roles. I mean, obviously, Neil, throughout the course of his career, has been a guy that can provide some goals. So you want to see what he looks like playing up a little bit. And by the way, neither one of those guys is even guaranteed to make the team at this point. You know, they still have the whole 10-day window game window to assess Neighbors before they have to make the call of whether to keep him for the year or send him back down to juniors. So that's part of the equation here. And some of that has to do with Oscar Sundquist. And I'm going to get into that coming up next, talk a bit about how that whole thing plays out, because that could coincide with around the time that Sundquist is going to be ready. So a little more Blues talk next up here on KMOX.
There's a high fly ball.
Welcome back to the Meyer Jensen Sports Open Line.
And it's a gunner!
Big fly, Nolan Arenado.
A personal injury law firm, because sometimes the gloves have to come off. MeyerJensen.com.
And the Billikens win this one.
Touchdown, Kansas City!
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, just a little bit more hockey here. We got more baseball coming up after the top of the hour. A little football later on next hour as well. You know, interesting, I mentioned Oscar Sundquist in that last segment, and it's interesting because, you know, he's not going to be ready yet, but it doesn't sound like it's going to be too long before Sundquist could be ready to return from injury. And we all know how valuable that guy is. I mean, you talk about a guy. I remember when they got him, I didn't think much of it, and I was like, okay, good depth guy, and all that. And then you see what he's become, a very valuable forward. You know, I think it's interesting that the timing of his return could coincide with when you have to make a decision on Neighbors. So, you know, and you do have a bit of a roster crunch, right? I mean, if you just look at what you have now, I mean, I mentioned the guys that are in the lineup tonight already, and I didn't list them all, but you got 12 in there tonight that all would seem to have a pretty good chance at making the team. You know, James Neal is not a sure thing, but he's had a good camp, and he's obviously a veteran guy that can do a lot of different things, and he can score, which doesn't hurt. You've got Neighbors in there tonight. Again, another guy that's not guaranteed. And the guys that aren't in there tonight, guys like Dakota Joshua and Mackenzie McEachern, and well, obviously Sundquist because of the injury, and you've got Logan Brown as well. Like, you've got a lot of – you got some pretty big numbers there, and Kyle Clifford didn't mention him either. So there's another guy that brings a big physical presence to you. So you've got a lot of choices, which, by the way, is a great thing, but it's going to lead to some decisions between now and really, you know, with the start of the year. And also, you know, when Sundquist comes back, it's not like when Sundquist comes back, it'll be, oh, yeah, you got an empty spot on the roster here. You just slide right in there. Like, no, somebody's going to have to move out. So I don't know how much that impacts. I mean, it's got to be it's got to have an impact on the decision eventually with Neighbors. Again, maybe not for the opening day roster, the opening night roster. But within the first, you know, few weeks of the season, you're going to have to make a call there. Is he playing a significant enough role to burn that year? Or do you just send him down and he's going to have to be at juniors and you can't have him back until the junior season comes to a close? I think that's a fascinating decision. When you think about, you know, Neal having a good showing, and then what do you expect out of the fourth line, right? Because even if you send out Neighbors, like let's say he projects to be in the top nine on opening night right now. Well, he probably doesn't project there when Sundquist's back. Because I don't look at any of those other guys. I mean, you're not Saad, O'Reilly, Perron, Kyrou, Shen, Buchnevich, Tarasenko, Thomas. Those guys aren't playing on the fourth line. And certainly Sundquist can. I mean, he's got the kind of grit to him to do it, but he's been better than that, although maybe initially you want to limit his minutes as he's getting healthier and getting back to normal. But it's not going to be a need, and we know that Bozak can play up on a third line. If James Neal is on the team, you know he can do that. I really like the depth on this team. I think this is a really good team. Some of the projections I've seen, some of the analytics do not love this team. But I think the humans seem to like them more. So I've seen a couple things. Dom Lecision does really good work for The Athletic, and he's the analytics guy. And a lot of the projections that he's come up with, again, it's not his opinion, just the way his numbers work, they do not come up with favorable ratings on the Blues this year. For obvious reasons. Because it's based on the numbers from last year. Well, last year they didn't play very well for a lot of the year. I thought they were pretty mediocre last year. And I think that the roster is better than that. I mean, you know, some of that had to do with Parayko not being in there. Hopefully he stays healthy this year because they really need him to. But, you know, we all know what the injury situation was with a number of guys, including Thomas. We all know that it's kind of an odd year for some other players. But you didn't have Vlad at all. And I don't know what we're going to get out of him, but he's healthy. And a healthy Vlad, if that guy's on your third line, even if he's 75% of what he is at his peak, he's still a pretty good third line player. And I don't know that he's going to stay there. And I don't know that, I mean, you know, they could keep the minutes fairly even for the guys on those top three lines if they wanted to. They don't have to really favor it all that much. And you know he's going to be a part of the power play in some way, shape, or form. But I think there's more known commodities in this. I love the upgrades with Saad and Buchnevich, and nothing against Jaden Schwartz, but he's a hell of a player, and he's going to be missed in some ways. But I do think they replaced him and maybe even improved a little bit in that regard. I like the team. I think they're going to be really solid. And I saw Greg Wyshynski's piece today, the ESPN NHL preview, and they had the Blues ranked as the 12th best team in the league, which I think is probably about right. I think, you know, the way I was looking at it before I saw that was somewhere in that range of, you know, the top part of the middle third of the league. All right, so that's going to wrap it up for this hour. We got some baseball coming your way after the news on KMOX.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.